Max is supported by the following community underwriters. Tito Banditos, Catskills Taco and Tequila Bar, Mexican food and cocktails, margaritas and craft beers, indoor seating and takeout, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Tito Banditos, Catskills Taco and Tequila Bar, Main Street in Pine Hill. Reservations at 845-254-3113 or titobanditos.com. Home Goods of Margaretville, corner of Main and Bridge Streets in Margaretville, New York. Now carrying spices, flour, jams, mustards, coffee and tea, organic vegetables and fruits, and local eggs, milk, cheese, and baked goods. And, of course, cooking basics and tools of the trade for everyone at home. Home Goods of Margaretville. Open Wednesday through Saturday, 11 to 5, 845-586-4177 or hgom.net. The Fierce Grizzly Grocery and Cafe in Roxbury. Quality meats, fresh fish, and groceries. All at the Fierce Grizzly, purveyors of fine foods on the corner of Main Street and Vega Mountain Road in Roxbury, New York. Qualterry's Nursery and Garden Center on Route 30 in Roxbury. Open 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Large and small trees, shrubs and perennials, houseplants and pottery, wind chimes and birdhouses, trellises and tools. Qualterry's Nursery and Garden Center, Route 30 in Roxbury. Smiles required. 607-326-4282. 607-326-4282.
Hey, I'm Rob. Indie, alternative, whatever you want to call it, you'll hear the best of what's new, breaking, and emerging from all walks on Peak Awareness. Every Sunday from noon to 2 p.m. on WIOX Roxbury. Serving New York's Catskills region at 91.3 FM, MTC Cable Channel 20, the Radio FM app, and worldwide at WIOXradio.org.
Okay, you are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, and at 107.5 FM on the campus of SUNY Delhi on smart devices through the Radio FM app, and everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
Going well. How are you?
Doing well. It's good, nice weather out there right now.
I hear it's going to warm up.
Ah, hell.
Hasn't it been nice, though?
Yeah, it's been a nice, cool July, which
yeah,
I like.
Yeah, I can go for walks up a hill and not sweat too bad.
I know it. Took a little walk up in Kelly Hollow for lunch today.
Cool. How's Kelly Hollow?
It's nice. You know, I don't know. Nice walk through the woods.
Yeah.
Found some stone cairns.
And?
I don't know. You know, are they Native American or are they settlers?
I don't know.
It's tough to say.
I don't know how to tell anymore.
But yeah, we had a radio show about that a few weeks ago. But, I got bit up. I was in Woodland Valley this morning in town of Shandaken, and man, the new no-see-ums were kicking my butt, man.
Yeah, that's what you said.
Yeah, that was the worst.
Yeah, I've been getting into the mosquitoes lately, but not so bad on the no-see-ums. Maybe they haven't moved as far west as I am yet.
Whatever happened to the electrocution devices at night?
The fly swatter? Oh, yeah, the bug zappers?
Yeah, when I was a kid, that was a summer sound. You know, the you know? It's awesome.
I don't know. You should get one, though. Put it on your porch.
You gotta bring that stuff back, man. What happened to those?
I don't know. I never had one.
Yeah, they just fell out of fashion. But everyone had them. Well, not everyone. But, you know, you couldn't really go anywhere without hearing a bug zap or somewhere. You know?
Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah.
Well, I found some ginseng on a walk on Monday. You know, they say you can't... It doesn't grow in disturbed sites very readily, but man, this was grown smack dab in the middle of a log road.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and I don't know why the deer have definitely browsed off one of the prongs. It was a three-pronger, down to two, and it looked like it was trying to grow that third one back a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Hadn't seen that before, but I think what it was the... I don't think it can't grow in disturbed sites. I think it's just that the deer walk on the log roads and they browse it.
Yeah.
That's why you don't see it. But just above where I found it was a more highly traveled logging road, so I think the one I was on just got missed.
Overlooked, huh?
Yep, and so that's what I found, and a bear.
Bear?
And a bear.
No kidding.
Yeah, he was on a power line, walked up onto the power line. He was probably two terraces of elevation above me. These Catskills are very terraced.
Yeah.
And must have been browsing blackberries, same as I.
Yeah.
He gets up on his hind legs looking down at me. I mean, he's got to be 300 or 400 yards away.
Huh.
He's way up on the top of that slope, and but the power line cut, you can see a long ways.
He didn't care?
No, I mean, he was concerned about me, but he didn't run off.
Right.
He just kind of got... He went up. You can only see it when he got up on his hind legs. When he went back down, he was well within the blackberries. Must be the wind was blowing up there, because I don't think he could have heard me that far away. I wasn't really being loud.
Yeah.
That was fun to see.
I think they have plenty of food this year. I mean, there's a lot of apples out there, from what I see. And acorns are dropping in places.
I've seen that. I saw a lot of cherries this year. Found a pile of bear scat that was full of cherries.
You know if they eat shagbark hickory?
I don't know. You know what? I do know, because I watched a bear at our board member there in Margaville on... right outside of town there.
Yeah.
Watched a bear climb up a shagbark hickory, and I don't think he was scared. I think he was going up that tree.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's a lot of hickory nuts this year. So, that's good.
Yeah, seen a lot of walnuts, too.
Yeah, I like to pick some hickory nuts this year. That's my favorite one.
Hickory butter?
Yeah. I think it's time. It's been some years now. So, I think it's time. Pick some hickory, no?
I've never tried it. I'd like to.
It's pretty good. The secret is, you ready?
I'm ready.
Pick them in September when they fall, right? The husks come easily off. Just get a regular nutcracker, crack them up, put them in a bucket, and then put them in boiling water instead of using a nut pick, which is tedious.
Yeah.
And then most of the nut meats will rise to the top. Scoop them out, roast them. Now you have your nuts, and you can do what you want with them.
All right, secret is out.
Yeah, and then I put them in a high speed food processor or whatever, and
chop them up.
It makes peanut butter or hickory butter.
Yeah,
so. A little maple syrup, salt. So.
Have you ever done like maple hickory nuts instead of maple peanuts?
No.
Are you gonna try now? Or you don't think it would be?
I don't know. I guess you could. You know what? It's so special that I haven't tried that.
Seems like a waste, then, huh?
Yeah, I guess you could. It's a great taste. They taste like pecans, but a little better.
So they got to be shagbarks?
Yeah, the other ones taste like garbage.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's bitter nut hickory, which, as its name implies, is terrible. Then there's pig nut hickory, which you get down in the Hudson Valley, and that's just as terrible.
So, okay.
Yeah. No, shagbark's where it's at.
All right.
So tonight's topic... We're going to be talking about a pretty general, broad topic here, John.
You sound excited.
Yeah. Do I?
Oh, I don't know.
Damn. All right. Yeah, forestry past and present. And obviously it's going to be from a Catskill Mountain perspective. So, you know, basically it's kind of like state of the forest. Talk a little bit about what's going on now overall from what we see when we're working for the Catskill Forest Association and covering the, I don't know, I guess our members have about 50 to 65,000 acres and about 1,100 members, so we get around.
I counted once, and we advertised six counties, but I've been in 14 counties across New York State working for CFA in the last 8 years.
You counted, huh?
Decided to count one day.
Jesus.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't hard to think about it. It took 5 minutes.
Yeah. No. So, yeah, we'll talk about what's going on and also some, you know, in order to understand the present and where we're going, we have to talk a little bit about forest history. So here we go. So first of all, who owns most of the forest?
The non-industrial private landowner.
Yeah, right. I mean, a lot of people think it's the state of New York, the D.C., or it's, you know, some big timber baron out there, farmers, federal. We don't really have much federal in New York State. Really, that's more of a White Mountains has some, White Mountain National Forest, Green Mountain National Forest. The only place we have is the Finger Lakes National Forest.
Montezuma, and there's one other, right?
Yeah, there's just not much federal land in New York State. It's mostly D.E.C., right? So you have the Adirondack Forest Preserve and the Catskills. And then to confuse everyone, there's the thing called the Office of Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation, which is your state parks. Like Minnewaska, Bear Mountain, Harriman, or Hudson Highlands,
Sterling.
Harriman, Sterling. Those are the state parks, not the D.C. Got it? All right. So, but most of the land is really owned by just small forest owners. And the average parcel size in the Catskills is about 18 acres plus or minus. So most of these people are managing for recreation or just to get away from it all, right?
Yep.
So, mostly non-industrial private forest landowners, as John said, 74% of timberland, in quotes, that's land that can be used for timber, is owned by private landowners. And I know if you go to other talks, you're going to hear people say from other entities, not at the Catskill Forest Association, I hope, that those are vulnerable lands. Well, I say, hell no. Those are opportunities. To do the right thing.
Why do they think that?
Well, they think if the government doesn't own it, it's vulnerable. Well, you know.
Vulnerable to what?
Vulnerable to development. You know, this is kind of the mantra or the paradigm. But I see the opposite. I've worked for the D.C. I've worked as a wilderness ranger and stuff like that. I've worked for the Green Mountain National Forest. And you're very actually limited in what you can do on government land. Cutting trees is kind of difficult to do. There's a lot of conflicting stakeholders, right? And there's a lot of people involved in that. The private landowner has a lot of opportunities. They can manage for wildlife in many different ways. They can manage for timber. They can manage for maple sugaring. They can manage for, I don't know, help me out here. They can control invasive species much more with flexibility.
Right.
I mean, even spraying or doing anything like that on state land is a big deal sometimes.
They can change the landscape as they choose, right? You know, say the forest is, for whatever reason, you want to change it to a young forest. It's currently aging out. We can make it a young forest again.
Yeah, which the DUC is touting through their Young Forest Initiative. But it's hard to do.
Right.
Because they have a lot more politics going on.
Yeah.
And I think there was one spot in the Adirondack Forest Preserve where they actually sprayed hemlock trees to treat hemlock woolly adelgid.
On the forest preserve.
I think so. And,
interesting.
But that's very rare. Hmm. And most of the time they're just going to watch them die. So, you know, there's a lot more opportunities, I would say, on private land. And after all, we need wood products from somewhere. And, you know, if we don't use our land, we'll have to use someone else's most likely. And land is not renewable, John. You know what I'm saying here?
It's finite resource.
That's what I'm saying. So, what does your forest look like, you know? When you think of a forest in the Catskills, what's a typical forest you envision when you're out and about?
Well, I've only got 5 acres and about a third of it's forested, so my 1-point-whatever-acre woodlot
yeah.
is the typical Catskills forest. There's I think beech, birch, maple, no hemlock, but most of the northern hardwood forest is there. Some remnant old neglected apple trees along the power line cut that got some sunlight for a little longer than the rest are trying to hang on but aren't doing so hot.
Yeah.
And that's where we're at.
That's where you're at, huh? Yeah, I mean, a lot of the Catskills, if you're up in the upper elevations like where you are, you might have a red maple overstory, maple overstory, and a fern understory.
Mm-hmm. I got a lot of that.
And if you're down in elevation like where I am, you may have an oak overstory with a midstory of maple, and the forest floor has Japanese still grass growing.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they have a green card or not, meaning New York fern is native and Japanese still grass is not, they share one thing in common: the deer don't eat them, right?
So they take over.
They take over. So that's where that's a big part of the Catskills. I mean, Sullivan County has a lot of fern growing underneath hemlock and red maple.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And stilt grass, as you get into areas like Forestburg and Lumberland, they have a lot of stilt grass in places like that. Well, Forestburg, but I don't get to Lumberland too often.
No, me either.
Yeah. I don't know why I said that.
Can't really picture it.
Just forget I said that. So, yeah. A lot of mature trees, so mature forests, anywhere from 45 years of age, which isn't that mature, but for sunlight, it still blocks the light and closes the canopy. And a lot of these trees are above 60 years old to 90 years old. A lot of people's forest is in that age group now.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey man, the 1970s are already 50 years ago. Just saying.
I know. I caught myself today. I was explaining to a landowner about money that was available in the 60s for these forest plantations, and they're aging out, and I said they're 50 years, you know, they're already 50 years old, and they had to point out, no, 60s was more than that.
Yeah.
My math was way off.
I know. I've been at CFA for over 10 years, and I remember saying, oh, it's, you know, it's probably when the dairy farms were abandoned in the 70s, they're 40 years old. Well, that's just wrong now, so.
Yeah, once you get over 50, that's, no, that's old, right?
Yeah.
Long time ago.
That's right. So that's the average age, 45 to probably 80 years old. An overstory that has closed, or a canopy stratum that has closed and not much light is going through. The understory is missing, or the midstory is missing. And 5 feet down, there's very little vegetation. That's from deer browse. We'll get into that. And a lot of fern and stilt grass and prickly things like barberry and what else? I don't know.
Well, if you get close to an edge where there's a little bit more sunlight, the barberry can take some shade, more so than multi-flora rose, and some remnant honeysuckle. But you got to have some sunlight coming from somewhere, either an edge or a little canopy gap in there.
Yeah. So that's what's mostly going on. I would say most landowners aren't really managing for anything. You know, it's kind of passive land use.
Yeah, let Mother Nature take over, take care of herself, right?
And it's understandable. I mean, most people don't make their living from the land, right? They don't make, it's not a rural economy, right? It's you know, this is somewhere you go on vacation or to get away from urban areas to escape other humans or whatever, right? So it's kind of like, you know, hey, it's the forest. You let it go and it's probably does well, right? Sometimes.
I mean, it depends on what you're managing, what you want to have happen, right?
That's what I was taught, you know, before I went to school. I mean, why wouldn't it be, you know? The nature is kind of like take care of itself. However, there's another side to this, and that's what a lot of this show is going to be about, is there's a consequence of doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
There's an impact from doing nothing. So if you're doing nothing in your woods, you might be managing, you are managing for something, actually. You know, so we'll talk about that. Doing nothing is mostly managing for northern hardwoods. You're basically managing for shade-tolerant plants only, right? Trees only that can take shade. So this is why most of our forest is going towards maple and beech. And hemlock, however, hemlock is dying, has issues from insects, right? So mainly it's maple and beech.
And for the average landowner outside looking in, or not even a landowner, just anybody looking at the subject, if that's what the quote-unquote climax forest is, Mother Nature wants to become, then why not, right? Why not let her go that way?
It's good for some things. You know, if you want to do maple sugaring, it's great. Right. You know, but it's bad. It's at the expense of what? Trees that need light. It turns out most of the trees that produce some kind of large edible fruit or nut are usually shade intolerant. They're disturbance dependent.
It takes energy to grow that food.
Right. Yeah, think of a blueberry. It needs a lot of light. An oak, a little less light, but still more light than, say, a maple tree. I was on a guy's property yesterday. Perfect example. Over in Accra, Greene County.
Okay.
So that's basically like the escarpment area. And really well-drained site. So it was a farm, probably, I'm going to guess, it was probably cleared less than 80 years ago. 100 tops, right? The first trees that came up were more shade-intolerant trees for the most part. White pine, red oak, shagbark hickory, right? And white birch, paper birch.
Mm-hmm.
So the first tree, and cedar, red cedar. What are the trees dead right now? Right?
All of those.
Right. Red cedar's dead because it's very shade-intolerant. So it pioneered that field. And now it's a dead standing tree.
White birch are standing dead in the forest.
Or they're on the ground.
Or they're on the ground.
Right. Red oak is intermediate. It's in between, and it's doing well. But, okay, and then underneath those trees are shade-tolerant trees. You have the maple growing up underneath, for the most part, and black birch.
Hmm.
And what's happening now to the red oaks is the red maple and sugar maple are catching up to the oak, and now you get this ladder death of branches. First, the bottom branches get shaded out. The tree casts it away. It's not paying its way, right? So he's like, well, what do I do here? I mean... And I could tell he didn't want to cut down trees and remove them because that would create a big mess. So you could just girdle them. We're far enough from the house and any targets or property of value. Just girdle some of the maples that are competing with these nice red oaks. And that would be probably the best thing you could do for wildlife on your property. Because otherwise, if you do nothing, these red maples are going to win and they will kill off the oak.
Yeah, they always do.
Yeah. So that he was like, he was really appreciative of that. He had something he could do. He's like, I'm going to do this. This is awesome. This is really cool.
Cool.
And I think he will. So that a lot of the Catskills is like that, you know?
Yeah, you see it all over. And not even the Catskills. I mean, I venture out to the Finger Lakes a lot, a few times a year. And the same thing's going on over there.
Yeah.
Oak seemed to be a little bigger, a little more mature, but the... Same thing. The red maple is... Well, actually, there's a lot more sugar maple. It's coming. It's
good
there.
Site, yeah.
Yeah, they're good sites, good soils, and sugar maple's coming. Coming with a vengeance.
Yeah. Dutchess County's like that.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of the places we've worked there, the oak is in the overstory, white pine, and the sugar maple's coming on strong. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Sometimes, if it's a really good, well-drained site, maybe go with what grows best. Go with the sugar maple.
Right.
Right? But... Turns out red oak can also grow in well-drained sites really well, too. And that can be a tough thing. But you gotta go with a healthy tree. That's another show about describing what a healthy tree looks like, if it's even worth releasing from competition. So that's what's going on, is basically as this forest matures. So we talked about picking trees over the other. So if you do nothing, you're basically managing for shade-tolerant trees, and that's one forest type. That's the northern hardwoods. That's maple, beech, birch, like black birch, not white birch. And it's at the expense of central hardwoods, like oak, hickory, and if chestnut was around, chestnut. Okay, so that's tree species composition. But then there's age classes, like size.
Okay.
And if you do, as the forest matures... Right? You get less sunlight shining onto the forest floor. The deer eat everything. If they eat everything 5 feet down, that means all the wildlife that count and rely upon vegetation 5 feet down are impacted.
Yes. Right.
So that's why deer are a keystone herbivore, right? We'll talk more about deer after the break, but you can't really talk about forest without talking about two things. Humans and deer, right? So we'll see.
I've said a thing or two. I think of lying in bed. I shouldn't have said, but there it is. You see, it's all clear. You are meant to be here. Such a fool. Whatever was done is done. I just can't recall. It doesn't matter at all.
From the beginning, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, and this is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. with Ryan and John. Tonight's topic is forestry, past and present, a Catskill Mountain perspective. We were just talking about the consequences of a forest museum, of doing nothing. It's at the expense of trees and plants and shrubs that require sunlight, and most of those are what give a lot of fruits and berries and nuts for wildlife. And so let's talk about the keystone influences on the forest. The two keystone influences, one, I would say, is deer. They are a chief consumer of plants, of the forest, if you will.
Yes.
And the deer are mostly managing, I would say, most people's forest. What would you say? I don't know.
And beyond. I mean, in their yardscapes and everything. I mean, everything's impacted by deer. You know what I saw? This is kind of off topic for just a second. I saw Norway spruce browsed by deer in, guess the town?
Gardner.
Come far west.
Well, Warsaw.
Keep coming.
Delhi?
Delhi. Delhi, man.
Oh, yeah?
That
wow, that's the first time in Delaware County.
I had to be shown because I didn't believe it. I was like, you got to show me this. They walked me right up to the tree and everything.
It's starting to become more common.
Yeah.
I guess. I didn't believe it either. I saw it in Sullivan County in Swan Lake. And they were browsed. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess for everyone listening, the meaning is you know, Norway spruce is such a prickly needle. It's so impalatable. There's not a lot of nutrients in it. The deer just can't do anything with it. Yet, so if they browse it anyway, that means they're starving.
As C.W. Severinghouse, biologist for the DEC back in the day, found that deer can die with a full stomach.
Mm-hmm.
If that vegetation offers no nutrition, they will just die from a full stomach. That's not good. So most people's forest is being managed, if you will, by deer. Because, you know, they don't have much food as the forest matures. There's very little sunlight, very little plants. So they are impacting the forest more than anything. They're not being overwhelmed. There's no food being left in the forest to perpetuate and grow and regenerate.
Yeah, and oftentimes we're not talking about the growing season, right? I mean, there's a lot coming up, new growth sprouting everywhere, different plants that are only available that time of year. What we're really talking about when the impacts are the greatest in the winter months.
Yeah.
Deer switch to nearly 100% woody browse from November through March, typically. And what is the woody browse? That's our tree seedlings.
Absolutely. So a deer apparently can browse about 4,000 seedlings per deer. Half a ton to a ton of vegetation per deer per year. 4 to 6 pounds of buds per day. It adds up to a lot. So what's the second most influential thing in the forest? And I would say it's humans.
This guy.
Yeah. If the deer are the chief consumer, I'm going to say humans can be the chief producer.
How so?
Because we have thumbs, and we know a secret. Want to know a secret?
Ringer, dinger, dinger, dinger. Ring.
Well, I mean, other primates have thumbs too, right?
Yeah.
We got big brains.
Yeah.
Thumbs. And then what do we do with that? What's the big secret? I mean, we're hairless. We're the hairless ape. Why are we hairless? How can we? Better question is, how can we afford to be hairless?
We can control heat, and that being fire.
Fire. It's what makes us human.
Yeah.
Fire is, whether it's in a combustion engine, if it used to be open woods burning. The absence of fire is death. That's Antarctica. Right? It's pretty much the only continent where there's probably no fire.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no humans, unless they're silly and they fly in to study ice. But we laugh at them, right?
I guess.
Okay, I laugh at them. I don't know why they go there, but yeah. I wouldn't go there. In any case, we know how to use fire, or at least we think we do. And the ability to control fire and use it wisely can severely impact vegetation. And thus far, I would say the environmental movement has taught us to harp on only the negative aspects that humans do to the forest. But there is a ton of positive. And if you're an oak tree, a hickory, or an American chestnut, you kind of need fire, right, to get a competitive advantage over the maple trees.
Yes.
Here's the other thing. If humans for thousands of years have relied upon deer for food, I would argue that deer rely upon humans also for food.
Right.
And since, right, so what would, you know, Native Americans, we know they burned, and it created younger forest. It perpetuated pyrogenic landscapes, which is balanal cultures or nut trees and fruit trees. And as a result, they ate the deer. It provided better quality habitat, and in return, they had more deer to hunt.
Some wildlife and deer fall into this category as what we call edge specialists.
Yeah.
They utilize the edges of two different types, either a forest type or any type of land cover type. And what creates that best is humans. Anything we do is creating some sort of an edge. And that's where deer find their food, and that's where they survive.
Absolutely. Now, some of you may be thinking, come on, I mean, how do you know Native Americans are doing this on purpose? Well, as a forester, I believe it. What are the accounts you always hear of? What tree was so common east of the Mississippi that people rave about it? It was one-third or two-thirds of the forest.
The giant American chestnuts.
And there's another tree. So it's American chestnut and white pine.
Big white pines for the ships that they build.
Yeah. If you're north in New England, it's white pine. And if you're in the south or even in the Hudson Valley, American chestnut. Both of those trees knee disturbance. They're shade intermediate. And that tells me someone was burning.
They needed full sunlight to sprout, or nearly full sunlight.
Right? Yeah. I mean,
so white pines. How did sunlight get there?
Exactly. And in the mountains, maybe where there were less humans, it reverted earlier to those shade-tolerant trees. So, is forest management new? I would say no. I think Native Americans had to eat like other human beings. And there was probably a lot of them since our land is mostly good. And they burned. It was the only thing they had to control vegetation. They didn't have Husqvarna or steel, John.
Yep.
Are you a Husqvarna or steel guy? Are you still Husqvarna?
Yeah, I'm Husqvarna.
I'm both.
You're both. Well, I own a steel, but it's an ancient. It's a 1970s.
Oh, that's like 50 years ago.
Yeah, 1978 or 9, second biggest saw they ever made.
Oh, yeah, that is big. What kind of bar are you running on there?
42 inches.
Oh!
It's big. It's heavy.
Mine's 36, but yeah, 42, man. That's big.
That's for a chainsaw mill, though. It's not like you have to lift that all day.
Yeah, true. So these landscapes are called pyrogenic landscapes. Isn't that a cool word?
Pyrogenic, yeah.
If you don't remember anything about this show, you can say pyrogenic. People say, what does that mean? That means a landscape filled with plants that rely upon fire. Pitch pine, oak, hickory, chestnut, blueberry,
mountain
sassafras,
laurel.
Mountain laurel, sweet fern, etc., etc. All right? And where the Native Americans are really good at burning, so they were in the process of removing maybe the northern hardwoods and replacing them with central hardwoods, oak, hickory, chestnut. And where they were really successful, they removed the central hardwoods and replaced them with grasslands or oak savannas.
Hmm.
A lot of settlers saw these areas in Wisconsin and western New York where they have elk. If you have elk, if settlers saw elk in western New York, what does that tell you? That's man-made. Because if you stop mowing the lawn, last time I checked, in Chautauqua County, it becomes forest.
Right, and elk is a grazing species.
Yeah, it's a grazing species for sure. So that's a legacy from them. Then you have the settlers. The settlers had access to both fire and another trait or aspect to control vegetation, which is, what do you think? What's another way to control vegetation other than fire?
That Native Americans were using?
No, settlers. So now we're into the settlers.
Oh, yeah, the settlers were using. Agriculture, it's conversion, right?
Livestock.
Livestock.
Yeah. I mean, they had to use axes and stuff to put down the trees, but they could keep the vegetation down using animals, right? And this peaked in the late 19th century, late 1800s, early 20th century. Agriculture, land clearing peaks, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And we see the legacy of that to this day. A lot of our age classes of our forest date back to when this farm abandonment occurs. In the mountains, the real high elevations, maybe it dates back to the late 1800s, right? In some areas, it might date to the 1940s. In some areas, it might date back, like in this end of Delaware County, to the 1970s and 60s. A lot of dairy farms went under. So, and then you get a lot of fruit trees and vines growing from that era.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what would some be of those?
Oh, commonly you see a lot of apple trees and old farm pastures, right? Especially
man,
this part of Delaware County.
There are a ton of apples. I mean, Sullivan and Delaware are just
loaded, right?
They're loaded with volunteer or wild apple trees.
Yep, but the cedar tree we already talked about, that pops up in your neck of the woods in Ulster County pretty commonly.
Yep, down in the Walk Hill Valley and the Rondout, a lot of eastern red cedar. Pretty cool. A lot of our black cherry trees, beautiful black cherry that people made flooring out of, dates back to this time period.
Yeah, accidental, right? We're probably not going to have that again.
So, I know there was some game laws that were implemented in the late 1800s and early 1900s. However, I think more important was the habitat that came back. So now farm abandonment starts to occur. And this is probably the most phenomenal thing to ever, I would say ever happen in our natural resources in the Northeast and Eastern United States is farm abandonment. And wildlife follows. Yes, there were some game laws, but I think the wildlife could only come back once livestock wasn't keeping the vegetation down. So first you get small mammals coming back like rabbits, woodcock, rough grouse. Then you start getting maybe deer. Finally, coyotes, bear, bobcat, stuff like that. And then maybe the mountain lion.
Maybe one day.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a strong correlation, and I would say it's not just a correlation, it's a causation. With forest coming back and wildlife following suit. I think it was even bigger than any law that Theodore Roosevelt could have passed or National Wild Turkey Federation. They do great things, but I think it was the farm abandonment that was accidental that brought back a lot of these wildlife species. So forest land use history, last 50 years. So what's going on in the last 50 years now?
Well, there's not a lot of farms left to abandon.
Yeah.
So we're mostly forested in some fashion, whether it's young or in transition or maturing. And a lot of these areas are even further transitioning again into that beech, birch, maple, and maybe hemlock.
Yeah, they go from being pole stands, seedling saplings, to pole stands, to small saw timber or mature trees. Not the oldest trees in the world, but still blocking the sunlight from the forest floor. Working forests become more looking forests. Forests maturing, introduced insects and disease. We have lots of those.
Mm-hmm.
Fire suppression. Smokey the Bear is born in, I think, 1942. And fire suppression is a big deal. So fire is taken out, which means there's going to be trees that are taken out because of that. The oak, hickory, and chestnut. So we had Mark Abrams from Penn State on a few years back, and he coined this phrase, I believe, called mesification. And that is he believes the whole forest in the eastern seaboard is basically going under mesification. That's fire-adapted hardwoods are being replaced by mesic hardwoods, or fire-sensitive. Right? An example. Beech, birch, maple, basswood, hemlock are mesic hardwoods that are fire intolerant. And xeric hardwoods, which is oak, hickory, chestnut, are being suppressed, basically.
Yeah.
And this is very counterintuitive to people because they think climate change, we're going to get more southern hardwoods like oak, hickory. It's not true. It's not happening.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually, despite warming temperatures, we're losing xeric or southern hardwoods. And we're gaining northern hardwoods. And Mark talks about his studies that even in periods of cooling thousands of years ago, he was finding that xeric hardwoods increased then because the cultural things that were going on from Native American burning were perpetuating those species. So what I'm trying to say is maybe the culture matters more than the temperature.
Well, definitely
to some
does.
Degree.
You see, these species exist all the way down to North Georgia. I mean, there's maple trees in North Georgia, as far as I know, right?
Yeah.
They're just not dominant there, right?
Right.
So it doesn't matter about temperatures at that point. I mean, think of how warm North Georgia is.
Oh, well, John, I mean, think about where we work, right? So when you think of maple trees, you think, oh, maple sugaring occurs in Delaware County and in the Catskill Mountains, right? It's not a valley thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, working in Dutchess County at elevation 200... compared to here, which is elevation 1,400 to 2,600 feet, Dutchess County's full of sugar maple now.
Full of it.
They'll be sugaring in the future.
Sure.
No doubt. Right?
Yes, that's right.
So we have mesification, lack of fires, lack of forest cutting, regeneration is suffering because of a maturing forest canopy. I think this is, I would argue, it's probably unparalleled by anything in the last 5,000 years. I think this density of forests is new. I think our forests have probably been more dense than they ever have been. That's a guess. I don't know. Maybe.
Could be.
Which might leave them more susceptible to insects and disease. I don't know. We have more trade now. It's more a global economy, but trade has been going on a long time. But I do know that trees are more susceptible to insects and disease if they're struggling with other trees for sunlight.
Right, stressed.
That's how a tree eats, right? So I don't know. It just seems like there's so many trees dying anymore.
I know, and the list of pests just gets bigger and bigger. Seems like monthly anymore.
Yeah, and I feel like they, you know, I think it's from density. I really do. It's a mixture of things, probably, but who knows? If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is forestry, past and present, a Catskill Mountain perspective, and we're going to talk next about what you can do, you know, what can be done. Hey, man, that's Ram Jam.
I forgot about Ram Jam.
You know, back when guys had mustaches, no beard.
This was like on the, you know, playing in the locker room before a football game.
You think you get away with that today, John?
No.
Mustache, no beard?
Mustache,
you got to bring it back. Got to bring it back, man. You got to watch the video of the guy jamming out with just a mustache. It's
thin,
awesome.
Thin mustache?
No, thin mustache. Thick. No, this is a thick mustache.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel like that's not very common, you know?
No, I don't see it very often.
Yeah, mustache, no beard. All right, anyway. This is From the Forest. every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., and tonight's topic is Forestry Past and Present, a Catskill Mountain Perspective, of course. And what can be done today? We talked about the Maturing Forest Museum, and, you know, maturing forest is really good for certain things. I can think of a couple things like mushrooms, ginseng, black bears who can climb trees and get to the food source. But for other things, it's not so good, like the white-tailed deer. And people are probably rolling their eyes, oh, they're talking about deer again. Well, the reason why we talk about deer is not just because we like to hunt deer, which we do.
Yes.
But, I'm sorry, I lost track of my thought.
Got to think about deer hunting there.
But the other reason is, equally important, John, yeah, is that if the deer's belly is empty because it has nothing to eat from limited sunlight from a mature forest, then it will eat everything. And then other wildlife will suffer because nothing will grow from 5 feet down. So that's why we talk about it.
That's right.
That's right. So what can be done? And this gets into, you know, the DEC is now touting it. So is Audubon, about kind of slowing down or reversing succession, trying to get more younger forest, age class diversity, if you will. So things you can do today is to favor fruit and nut trees. Because as we said before, a lot of fruit and nut trees need sunlight. And they need a human touch. And I feel like humans who have been a part of the forest for thousands of years have probably provided that human touch, John.
Yes. So find the right tree and open it up. That could be the one thing you do.
That's right.
You know, just cut those 6 or 8 maple trees. Red maples are number one stem in New York State. We have more red maple than any other tree. So if you cut one down, don't feel bad about that.
Yeah.
Not hurt the population of red maples. But that's typically what's choking out some of these trees, especially these black cherry. Black cherry stands are usually dense with maple, red maple. Red oak oftentimes has red maple around it, especially near the top of a hill where the sugar maple can't do so well.
Yeah. Don't be silvophobic.
Silvophobic.
All right. Cut some trees. If you don't cut trees, you're still killing trees, okay? You're just being passively aggressive.
Mm.
All right? You're still killing trees. You're saying, I'm only managing for maple. And I love maple, but come on. Oak's good, too.
It's like the person that eats beef, but it's against farming.
That's right. Come on.
Can't hide
it. So, patch clear cuts. This is something else you can do. Openings that are at least 2.5 times the height of the surrounding trees. You know, as wide.
Quarter acre minimum.
Yeah, quarter acre. There you go. Thanks. So try to get some young stuff growing. You might not. You might not get anything growing because the deer might be like, oh, anything that grows, we're going to eat it. That might be true.
It could fail.
It could fail. But at least you have coarse, woody debris on the ground that offers structure and cover for other small mammals. Because right now, probably a lot of you have nothing in the understory. So if you're a wabbit or a grouse, you're just sticking out there. You're basically fox bait, you know.
Yeah, and pay attention to the trees you're cutting. You know, there's patches in the forest that are poor quality for a lot of reasons, not just the species composition, you know.
Yeah.
Cut those areas. You don't have to go cut beautiful saw timber, future saw timber. That's not what we're saying.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, don't cut nice trees. And if you're unsure what a nice tree is, you can always, you know, call the Catskill Forest Association. We can go over that. You know, we don't want to cut your nice timber. I mean, we want to do that. But so crop trees, as John was saying, release them on all four sides. There's hinge cutting. Can you explain hinge cutting?
Hinge cutting. Don't do it with a huge tree. Not advised. But we're talking smaller trees, pole-sized maybe. And you can cut them half to two-thirds of the way through, whatever gets them to start going. And get out of the way. Fall with a lean. And the idea is to leave that attached to the stump. You usually cut them whatever's comfortable for you, waist high to chest high when you're holding that chainsaw, or even a handsaw will work.
Did you say cut the big ones first?
Well, maybe fell the big ones out of your way. I wouldn't hinge the big ones unless you're super comfortable and understand what's going to happen.
Good point, John. Maybe less than, okay, the bigger ones meaning like less than 8 inches.
Yeah, so you're going to want to do those first because what you're doing is creating this cushion for the smaller ones to fall onto. You fell the small ones and the big one on top of it. It's defeats the purpose. It severs that hinge. What we want is those hinges or the stumps to stay intact to the stem and crown, and it creates this perfect little half circle, right? And the tree's going to die. That's not the point. But what it does is it sprouts out the next year. 1 to 5 years is adequate.
Yeah.
And what that does, it gives enough time for the deer to browse on that tree. There's plenty of food on that tree, just 40, 60 feet up.
Yeah.
Put it on the ground, the deer can browse that, and hopefully that creates a little cage around it. The deer, not that they can't penetrate through a treetop, it's just that they're kind of lazy and choose not to unless they're really hungry. And maybe a seedling will grow up through there of more desirable species.
Yeah, it could be cover for grouse. Could be a bedding area for deer.
Yeah, immediate cover, right?
Yep. If you don't want to cut trees down to the ground, you can girdle them and just do two rings around them. Now you have a dead standing tree that's really good for woodpeckers and all sorts of small mammals like flying squirrels, which I really love.
And owls.
And owls. Oh, yeah. So we're running out of time here. We got about a minute.
Oh.
So that would be snag trees. You can just girdle them. You know, you girdle trees around a nice tree like a fruit or a nut tree or any tree that you like to allow the light in. And the trees can stand dead. You do that. You don't do this near your house, of course. You do it in the woods. So, in conclusion, we have a lot of forest out there, more than we did 100 years ago. However, a lot of forests are now suffering from not the lack of forest, but I would say quality. There are impacts to doing nothing. You're only managing for shade tolerance. Is that what you want to do? If so, then keep it up. If not, you got to change. Fewer deer, but more browse. We have fewer deer than we used to, but we have more browse because there's less food out there. And we see most of the deer because they live where we do because there's young plants where we are. Barren understories, we don't want that. Usually creates less wildlife, and cut the right tree. And that's all we got on tonight's show. See you next Wednesday.
All right. Good night, everyone.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games. In an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town, where the